Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that help lift them above the average genre fare. If you are a first-time joiner of our podcast troupe, we would like to welcome you. Thank you for tuning in to us. We hope you heard about us from somebody perhaps that already listens to us. And if you are one of those that already listens to us, welcome back. It's good to see you again. Mm-hmm. We are in our second season. Oh, excuse me. We are in our fourth season.
Yeah, four. You lost two there.
I meant to say we are on our second episode of our second fourth episode. Season.
Yeah.
And my name is Tim, and I am here with my friend, David Horton. David, how are you?
I am well, Tim. Tim, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah. A little mixed up in the head.
Mixed up. It's like, what season is this? What episode are we doing?
I don't know. Well, I really don't know. But it is.
I mean, you know, they do come together. You know, I don't personally, but I know people who like binge podcasts and stuff, same way they binge audio videos. But I've never binged our show, you know, but I wonder if people do. And then we've got a lot out there. We've had this.
You know how many we've got? And here's another reason to say the word two. We are two episodes away from our 100th episode.
Wow. See, now that's a milestone there. That's
tremendous milestone.
And we're going to do something special for it. So you guys have to come back and listen to us or watch us. If you're watching us on YouTube, we do both. We record this and get it ready for broadcast for YouTube at the same time. And normally here, I tell you what I've been doing. Basically, I've been doing old stuff again. I went back and revisited more Babylon 5 because it's had a resurgence, you know, based on the end of last year when basically they got a refit and something that all of us have been wanting for 20 years. And they basically remastered the entire series and brought it back. And I've been seeing a lot of stuff about people finally finding out about it, people who had never watched it before watching it, and read a great article the other day about things we owe to Babylon 5 that we haven't, you know, that it doesn't get enough credit for what it did. Stuff like arc storytelling, stuff like a conceptual television series that began with an end in mind, rather than like, you know, Lost, for example, which began and then really didn't know where it was going
and just kind of blew up, you know, and faded away.
But also the diversity, the you know, the strong female characters, the great speechifying and writing, you know, the fact that other than Rod Serling, Straczynski is the only writer who basically wrote almost every episode of 5 years of television. Every word. No partnering, no nothing, you know, sort of thing.
And that's not the one he did with Ellison.
Ellison was story editor. And so he helped consolidate the story arcs and help kind of get it through the production line. But basically after halfway through the first season, basically Straczynski said, it's all in my head and I really don't have time to tell you people how that's going to work out. So I'll just do it. And so he was literally the Roddenberry. He was writing the episodes, prepping them as they came out, having final say of music, costuming, design.
Honestly,
casting.
That's more than Roddenberry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know how Serling, you know, wrote so many of the Twilight Zones, but literally for seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5, and about half of season 1, Straczynski wrote every word that was on.
Wow, that's a lot.
And it's phenomenal. It's great. You know, I think you would really like listening to his podcast too, or joining his Patreon, because he. He says stuff like people ask him questions on it. I follow him on Twitter, and people ask him questions like, did you know this character was going to do this in season 3? And he goes, not really. No. As I started working through it, the character just said he was going to do that. And that's where he wanted to go. So I just let him. And it's very similar to the way I've heard you say stuff, the way King has said stuff, mm-hmm. the way good writers do, where they say, yeah, I've got the basics, but sometimes the characters take you in when you start writing in their voices and writing for them, they take you in other places.
They do.
And I think that says, you know, that's good writing, because you're allowing the characters to be that real to you, sort of thing.
Well, and when it surprises you, it's going to surprise others.
Yes.
Or when it delights you, it's going to delight others. I mean, because it's something spontaneous and of the moment, I guess you would say.
Perfectly. What about you? What have you been doing?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because you always go back to it and I always go back to Walking Dead.
True.
And it's funny, we both go back to those series. However, I'm not going to talk about Walking Dead. I'm going to talk about a couple of movies that were referred to us by our listener, Joe Powell.
Mm.
These movies are, I guess, what you would call independent movies. One is a foreign film. The first one is called Possessor, I guess is how you would say it. Uh-huh. It is I'm pretty sure, Canadian film. It is definitely directed by a Canadian. It's directed by Brandon Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's son. Oh,
really?
Yes. And I could see exactly why Joe liked this movie. This movie is awesome. It is probably more science fiction than horror, so I think you would really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is body horror, gore, wacko. I mean, there are things in this movie that will really make you cringe. But the concept overall is science fiction. So I think you would like it. And it does remind you of a David Cronenberg movie. Actually, it may be a little bit better, because I think, you know, the actors and the production values are a little bit better than they were in the 70s when Cronenberg was directing.
I like the title graphic. That's really cool, too, with the reverse imaging almost. Sort of thing. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but it is on Hulu. Both these movies are on Hulu, actually.
Possessor.
And the second movie I liked a lot, most people will not like. It's called Thelma, and it is a Norwegian film. So it is a slow movie. It's a slow foreign movie. You know, you got kind of,
I think they're
attention.
Swedes, Mac.
I don't know. That's what I said to Joe. I was like, they're not Swedes, they're Norwegian. it's a slow burn. The only thing I can tell you really without giving too much away is that it's about a girl that's of an age where she's going away to school. Her parents have kind of sheltered her. They're a little religious. So there's kind of a carry feel to it, because strange things start happening and she appears to be responsible for them happening. And, but then it goes, I don't know, it kind of goes into the witch territory. It's not really witchcraft though. It's more of a psychological thing. Anyway, I won't get into too much depth about it. You won't recognize any of the cast, but they're all strong. And if I had to describe it, it's similar, not as good, but it's similar to Let the Right One In pacing. So you've got that real slow pace, but there's some real creepy stuff in it too. So I would recommend both of them, but people are going to probably like Possessor better than Thelma, just because it's not a foreign film and subtitled.
For those of you who are listening to our podcast and not on our YouTube channel, I do want to say that Tim has two posters, or I assume posters, behind him. And one, Possessor, has some bizarre, I think it's a female, but it looks like her face is being melted or ripped or pulled off by even a digital effect or something. And then Thelma is a girl's face with a goose on it. Is that a goose? What is that? On her face.
It's a bird. I don't know.
A bird.
It's a goose.
A bird is on her face. Like almost like the butterfly was in
Silence of the Lambs
sort of thing.
It's so very, very Silence of the Lambs looking poster for sure.
And very, you know, these are very, you know, graphic posters. They're cool. They spur thought. So that's kind of cool. That's neat. Thelma and Possessor. There you go.
Possessor. Mr. Cronenberg falling in the footsteps of his father.
Yeah, that's very cool, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, interesting that you mentioned strong cast and and we had talked about strong writing before, because I think our particular film for today possesses both of those high marks, at least in my opinion. For those of you who have who are joining us because of the topic, or who actually aren't because of the topic for today is The Martian, which came out in 2015. It was directed by Ridley Scott. It was written by Drew Goddard, based on Andy Weir's very popular book, best-selling book. A brief synopsis. It's fairly simple to tell the synopsis. We are following an astronaut team of the Ares space project who are on Mars doing initial surveying of Mars, and they encounter a freak storm in the very first, like, 4 minutes of the movie, and the crew has to abort the mission, return to the ship, and leave Mars. Unfortunately, there's an accident, and their botanist, Mark Watney, who is played by Matt Damon, is left behind on Mars, presumed dead. So they take off, but then suddenly we find out that, no, he's not dead. He is alive, survives the storm, and now faces the fact that he has to survive on Mars for 4 years. And the movie then proceeds to show, should we go rescue him? If so, how? If not, how does he survive? And then how that rescue works or doesn't work. Had you seen this movie before?
I have. I saw it when it first came out.
Okay. And did you like it?
I love this movie. However, my history with the project goes before that.
With the project.
Allow me a brief digression. When I first discovered indie publishing, before I started publishing myself, about, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe even longer, there were two huge successful independent publishing books. One of them was Andy Weir's The Martian.
Yep.
So I read it thinking, wow, this guy was nobody. And he put this book out there, and all of a sudden people are paying attention to him.
Yep.
And then the second one, which I have recommended to you, and I'm quite sure you probably haven't read, ironically, is another science fiction title. And I don't read science fiction books. So the first two indie books I really dove into were The Martian by Andy Weir and Wool by Hugh Howey, which would make another interesting film, I think, as well. And it is actually more of a series now. I haven't read the subsequent novels, but Wool is great. You need to read Wool.
Okay. Okay. So,
and both of them were independent science fiction books that took off. And The Martian got enough notice that Ridley Scott directed it, and it became an Academy Award winning movie. So...
Well, I have in my notes that I looked up, because I did not read the book, and I do need to read it. But that he actually originally serialized it and put it on his website, like a chapter at a time,
for free.
And then ended up doing his Amazon Kindle thing for like 99 cents a chapter or something. Or the book for 99 cents. I don't know. It was something insanely crazy that he like
Amazon goes through different phases. And I think there was a phase of like serialization back then that, he was publishing it by chapter, I think, instead of the book. Yeah.
But it
like, I got it when it was a full length novel.
Sold like tens of, once it was finally picked up by the publisher, and I actually have that publisher's name. What was it? It was,
I can't remember.
Crown was the first publisher. And sold like 35,000 copies in like 3 months. I mean, it was like, bang, done. and he basically sold it for like $100,000. That was it, you know, just the publishing rights. So that was amazing that he did it all himself. He was like a self-publisher. But it shows that if you do good work, it gets out there. Too. Right. I mean, this, I can't speak to the book, although in doing research for this, several people said it's very faithful to the book. It's a good feel to the book because he intentionally wrote Mark Watney to have a sense of humor. He didn't want him to be this mopey sort of character. So he gave him a lot. And I think Damon portrays that really strongly. And there's a hopefulness to it. But, you know, for my side, the big deal is, you know, this jumped up to like in my top 10 of definitive science fiction movies of all time.
As here we go again. Andromeda, you know what I mean? Strain all over.
But I mean, you know, without science, no story. I mean, this
science the shit out of this.
Yeah. I mean, perfect line. But, you know, that it's all this movie to me is all about the science and all about the math. It's a love story to science and math, saying, yeah, you can do it. His last little thing alone after the credits sort of thing, when he's talking to his class, or right before the credits, when he's talking to his class, that alone sums up the entire book, the entire movie, everything, and science fiction in general, is take it one problem at a time, figure out the problem, move on. Mm-hmm. It'll work, you know. But what was your reaction? So you said you love the book and you had read the book before the movie, obviously.
I have. And it's been so long now that I don't remember the differences. I do remember he's pointed out a couple of inaccuracies because they bother him. As far as like, I mean, there are some things that he had to stretch as far as believability, or it wouldn't have worked. One was suit getting torn in the beginning. I did know that. So I don't really remember the differences from the book. I just remember it being very faithful to the book, in tone and concept.
The suit tear, I think you're referring to, is the suit tear at the end, not the suit tear at the beginning. The beginning would work because the blood would coagulate and could actually do that. That could happen, especially on Mars, because it is so cold as well. Mm-hmm. Mars is like 80 below zero.
Right.
So it freezes really quick. And if you have a small puncture and it coagulates enough, your blood could, you know, freeze and set, and at least go over the hole, so you could have your suit would be preserved. Mm-hmm. But being Iron Man and flying toward the ship, maybe not. Well, you probably could do that, but
you just go, you'd be gravity. You'd just be George Clooney going out.
And you would die. Your oxygen is going out your palm. Okay. All of it sort of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember if that's in the book or not. I think they may have added that to make it more exciting toward the end.
Oh, that's a good question. I do not know that either. I also don't know why you would go out in a mobile EVA suit and tethered to the ship. That bothered me too. I thought that was weird. You wouldn't do both. You know, it's so weird that she has on her EV suit, the commander, and she's tethered with the big orange cable back to the ship. Yet the other dude, we had him climb all over the freaking ship.
I know, man. I was like, you're going to fall.
Dude, have you not seen Gravity? Do you not know what happens?
I know. That's like the biggest clue to me with this movie is Gravity. I was like, there's so many moments where I'm like, no, don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the details of it of itself. And I think we should start with cast, because this cast is phenomenal. I love this cast.
Yeah, it's like a great cast.
Every time they would add somebody new, even if I didn't know them initially, like the guy that plays Parnell, you know, I didn't know who he was, but his character is so great. And the actor is so good in that part. You know, even the little supporting characters are good in this. But some of the primos are great. It's Matt Damon stars as, of course, Mark Watney. Mm-hmm. But Jessica Chastain is Commander Lewis, his commander. Kristen Wiig shows up as Annie Montrose. Mm-hmm. And that was bizarre. And she threw me. But her character works for her. Mm-hmm. That's really, it was one of those where, and the key I kind of had from that is it's a very Robin Williams sort of thing. Where as soon as I saw her, I thought, ooh, comedian. Funny in the role, like, oh wait, she's really good at this. You know, and it worked for her. Mm-hmm. Jeff Daniels gets to play a royal dick in a way, as the head of NASA, Teddy Sanders.
He does it so understated though, and it's really funny how much of an ass he is, and he's so calm.
And he's so calm about being it. Guy goes, how much long time do you need? 6 months. You got three. And he walks away, you know, just that royal dick of a boss that you don't, but he's got a lot of pressure, got to do a lot of stuff. Rick Martinez is played by Michael Peña, who's good.
He's amazing. Yeah.
And such his part alone, I love the camaraderie he has with Watney. And because they're really the ones that talk to each other. I love when he first starts talking to Mark and they can actually type to each other. He goes, and I drew the short straw, da 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 da, da. And they're ribbing each other. But and it keeps right. showing Mark smile as he's reading the email kind of thing. And that's
right.
That's really cool.
And I love the subtle character development between him and Jessica Chastain's character, Melissa Lewis, because like they're toward the end when they're making decisions, they're the ones that decide automatically, instantly. And then they both say, oh yeah, we're both military. We should probably ask these guys. Yeah. You're like, okay, that's why they act that way. You right. know, they have a connection.
Well, it's the commander and the co-pilot, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely. Sean Bean is in this and he doesn't die. I'm sorry if that's a spoiler for some people, but he doesn't die in this. That's great.
Oh, and actually,
but I've he does get fired.
I should probably mention this because I meant to earlier and I forgot. This is a little bit of an intersecting key. Sean Bean is in the Possessor movie that I talked about earlier.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He doesn't have a big part, but he's in it.
Interesting.
So I was like, I just saw him.
And this was an interesting role for him because it was such a supporting role, but really important, you know, for the plot and everything else. So I thought that was great.
Same in Possessor.
Kate Mara plays Beth Johansson, and she's a great character in this. She's basically, I mean, treated almost a little stereotypically as the scientist, you know, because she's the one that's working on the trajectory. She's the one that's doing the math, but she's really good at it. Vincent Kapoor, who is basically, I think his role wasn't it. He was the head of the mission because Sanders is the head of NASA. He was the head of the Ares missions. He's played by Chiwetel.
You skipped a couple of the crew members, though. Did you mean to do that?
Oh, no, no. You're talking about
Sebastian Stan plays Beck. He is Kate Mara's. You find out later that I guess that they were love interests because they're together with a baby at the end. And that Sebastian Stan, you know, plays Bucky, the Winter Soldier in Marvel Universe, as well as a guy named Alex. Askel Henny played Alex Vogel.
Vogel.
Yeah.
And Vogel was like their sort of that was on the show. Sort of could be Russian, but wasn't Russian, you know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
But even their roles. Kapoor. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Even their roles are really cool. Even though they're supporting roles, they're still very vital to what's happening. I love when she goes, can you make a bomb? And he goes, well, yes, but I do have to caution you, making an explosive device in space is not the best thing to do.
Highly inadvisable.
Highly inadvisable,
Sebastian Stan is also that guy that's out there without a tether that was making me sweat, dancing around outside the space station.
Going hand over hand with no MMU and no tether. I was going, really? Really couldn't give him just one tether, maybe, or something. But Chiwetel,
then you get back to ground control. And that's with, how do you say his name?
Chiwetel Ejiofor. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm right about that, but correct me if I'm wrong out there, listeners. And he's so good.
Awesome.
He is always so good in everything he plays. I first saw him as the bad guy in Serenity, which is the Firefly movie, and he's the assassin in it. And gosh, he's good in that. But in this one, he gets a little bit, even though he gets a little bit of a reunion with Benedict Wong, sort of, because both of them are in Doctor Strange. Because Benedict Wong plays the head of the JPL, the Bruce Ng. I love his whole character. He's always
his character tired. Is hilarious.
He's always upset. He's always like, I'll try to do it. Yeah. He's like the Scotty without being Scotty, you know, kind of
thing. And he never sleeps and he works like 24/7.
Yeah. I love when he goes through and goes, okay, so we got that one ready in 64 days. Now we need to do it in 28. You're like, what? But again, and we keep talking about these moments because these characters are just so unique. They each have little moments. They each have nice cameos.
Very similar to what we were saying. Was it about the Avengers last mm-hmm. season, where they're there, but they're not, you know, there for stupid reasons like Uhura or somebody in a Star Trek film. They right. all have significant dialogue that contributes, including two more small characters, Mackenzie Davis and Donald Glover, who play Mindy mm-hmm. Park, the one that's always at the board at ground control, and Donald Glover, who's the astrophysicist that comes up with the way they could potentially rescue Mark.
Mackenzie Davis to me is highly underrated. I would mm-hmm. love to see her do like 9,000 things more, not only because she's very attractive, but also she's in probably the most highly regarded Black Mirror episode ever, San Junipero. She's in Blade Runner.
Okay, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, she's the one.
Her.
Yeah, that's an incredible episode of Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. And that's her in that. And she's also in Blade Runner. She's a prostitute. I mean, 2042, not the old Blade Runner. Right. New Blade Runner, 2042.
She reminds me of the character from WandaVision, the one that's like the
Kat Dennings character?
Yes. That's exactly who she reminds me of.
That's a cool key for her because she's that glasses, science, but also kind of witty and funny.
And nerdy sexy.
Yeah, the scene where Mark is responding, "Are you effing kidding me?" And Kapoor is sitting back on the couch and Mindy's at the screen and he looks at her and he goes, "Do you think he means that like, are you fucking kidding me? Or do you think it means, are you fucking kidding me?" And she takes a pause and she looks at him. You could tell she's that, how do you talk to your boss, kind of nervous, you know? And she goes,
"Right.
I think the last one."
Yeah, the second one.
But it could be, "No, are you fucking kidding me?" And she goes, yeah, it could. It's just, they've got great dialogue.
And then Donald Glover, I think, is known for that series Atlanta. I've never watched it, but he's mm-hmm. already won Emmys, I believe, for that show. And he is phenomenal as the like nerdy astrophysicist guy that thinks he knows how to save him.
Yes. And is he related to Donald Glover? I mean, the actor Glover?
You mean Danny Glover?
Danny Glover?
I don't know. I didn't look it up. But there's also a Corey Glover that was Danny's son and sang for Living Color.
In Living Color. And there's also a tap dance Glover who's really, really popular too. So maybe they're like a family.
A Baldwin family.
I was about to say Baldwins, but
I should have looked that up. I didn't think about it.
So we touched on writing a little bit. This was the screenplay for this was written by Drew Goddard. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a great screenplayist. One of the ones that I've got I first heard about him because he used to write for Buffy. He's a big Joss Whedonite. And he wrote Cabin in the Woods, the horror science fiction that I really like, that got delayed for like 3 years until Hemsworth became popular. And then they went, "Hey, we got this on the shelf back here. You want to see it?"
Is that what happened with that movie?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, it basically, it was Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard and just kind of got shelved. And then eventually he was popular, so they brought it back out and re-released. It's a good movie, though. I still like it.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
But there's two or three things writing-wise I wanted to mention that I really like the way they did here. Using the log, although it's somewhat cliche, works really well, I think, because of when he chooses to use it, how he chooses to use it, and the way Matt Damon does it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's probably part of the book, too, because it's mostly a first-person story.
And it's also, I think, more effective when they end it with a humorous punctuation mark. And a lot of them do end with a humorous punctuation mm-hmm. mark. Like, "I'm going to science the shit out of this," or "I'm the greatest botanist on the planet." And, you know, those lines usually tend to end those little dialogue.
When he's bitching about, oh yeah, they call me the fastest man in space. You know why? Because da, 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 and he goes off the whole thing about, you know, really doesn't matter about fast and blah blah, and he goes, yeah, because so they just do it because they know I like the title fastest man in space,
and I kind of do.
And he goes, and there's a huge pause, and he goes, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
But it's
Damon
the way
is very
they
underrated
that.
In it. I want to say he was nominated but did not win, right?
Yeah.
I think he was nominated for an Oscar. Actually, I probably have that. I do have that.
But he, I think he's very underrated in this film because it's a, you know, 60% of this movie is him. Mm-hmm. And so him being able to do those kind of sequences and show that kind, because it's a complex character. He's never a morose person. He gets angry at one point with the frustration after the explosion, and he almost loses it right before they take off, right before the MAV takes off for the rendezvous.
Well, it's when he's talking with all his friends.
Well, yeah, and when he's realizing the implication of, okay, this is it. There is no coming back from this.
No.
This is not a rebuild. And when
he has no control.
I'm gone. Yeah.
You know, he had some control on Mars. He has no control here.
No.
And I love that line about they're asking me to blast off the planet in a convertible.
In a convertible. Yeah. That was part of the whole fastest man thing, too. Yeah.
Right.
And then when he's talking again to Martinez, and she goes, the captain goes, he'll be piloting you from now on. He goes, well, I will tell him not to do any of those barrel rolls.
You know? Right.
But the way he writes Watney's log entries, which propel the plot along, and I think also the way he does the montages, I really compliment. And if it was Andy Weir who did it first, and obviously, and then the way they do it filmatically, but this movie covers like 18 months of time. But it never seems slow or boring, but it's covering a tremendous amount of time. And some of that's done in like fast forward when he's planting. It's like a camera view and it looks like it's fast forwarding, sort of time lapsing. Sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then other times it's done with huge montages of development, like developing the communications system, developing the rescue mission, all of that. You know, a big key for me was that was very Apollo 13, the way they condensed amounts of time, whether it's hours, days, a week, whatever, into just brief seconds and a minute on screen. And I think that's a very good choice, whether that was Weir who did it or Godard or Ridley Scott. It works really well to me for this film.
I would venture to say it was more in the screenplay territory than the book.
But the book still had to cover the same amount of time. Did it have huge chunks like 7 months later or a year later?
It may have. It has been so long since I read it. When did it come out? If this movie came out in 2015, I read it in like 2013 probably. So I haven't read it in 7 years. I don't really remember.
Yeah.
But it's much easier to do a montage on screen than it is in a book.
Oh, yeah. Yes, so. Definitely. Anything else cast-wise or from writing?
Well, I was going to say that I have absolutely no alternate casting. So apparently, once Ridley Scott was on board, he either knew who he wanted or people, you know.
The opportunity to work with Ridley Scott? Yeah, I would.
Mean, yeah, they're not going to say, oh, never mind, I'm doing this.
Right, yeah. Sorry, I got this Hulu thing that's coming up.
I mean, the only person that may have said, I got to wait a month would be Matt Damon. I can't imagine any of the others would have turned him down.
Well, no, I think from what I read in research, Matt Damon actually petitioned to do it. He loved the book.
Right.
And he said, I can do this movie.
Yeah.
He said.
And you at know, first, I think I read that someone had it before. Oh, no, it wasn't that someone else had it. It was that Ridley was trying to do Prometheus and he saw it and he said, no, wait a minute. I'd rather do this.
Yeah. I'd rather do this first. Let me do this first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of in production wise, I read that like Chastain, who's very method, one of her things to prepare for the characters is she actually interviewed astronauts and went and talked, and especially to two principal female astronauts, and said, you know, this is the character. She's left one of her own behind. Da, 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 da. And she even says, I tried to portray my character the way this particular astronaut would have, and decisions she would have made and everything else. As opposed to Matt Damon, who basically said he and Ridley literally sat down and went over every word of the script, every scene, and said, what do you want from this? How do you want him to, what's his reaction? What's his attitude? Blah, blah, blah. And that's how he developed Mark, was scene by scene analysis with Ridley. And I said, you know, that phrase alone, I could live with. I could do that. Mm-hmm. Scene by scene analysis with Ridley. That's like, you know, 5 minutes with Steven Spielberg. I'd do that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, he's right up there with Spielberg as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he's got probably more movies that I like than Spielberg when I think about it. Well, so yeah, he's a powerhouse.
Oh yeah. He's extremely visual. I love the aesthetic of this movie. It supports, like I said, the initial premise that science is real in this, and mm-hmm. science is a viable factor. And so the designs work. Well, except for, oh, we're going to design a Mars mission that looks like a huge luxury liner. No, probably not. It's not going to be that spacious and huge. It's like, what was that movie with Jennifer, Passengers?
I haven't seen it.
It had the worst production, the worst design of spaceship ever. It's horrible. It is literally like a cruise liner. I was going, okay, the entire crew is supposed to be in suspended animation for the entire trip, and yet you have these huge rec rooms and these warehouse size. I mean, it's crazy design.
You know, I like both of those guys, Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence, and I still haven't seen that movie because so many people have said how bad it is.
Okay, watch, go online and find the trick to it, because
it's like you got to watch it out of sequence or something.
Yes. And if you watch it out of sequence, it actually becomes really a cool movie, or it has some cool stuff to it.
Then why don't they re-edit it?
I don't know. I don't even know who did it to begin with. I just remember I've watched it twice, once because I wanted to, and the second one, because I like both of them. Yeah. But the second one, because I couldn't believe I didn't like it as much as I did, so I had to watch it again.
That's like me and Event Horizon. I have to watch it again every 3 years and say, why don't I like this movie?
Oh, yeah, that's why. Yeah. But in this one, the aesthetics work. The spacesuits are convincing. The ship designs are convincing. His use of, you've got the picture where he's planting in the back, and reminded me of, he's trying to develop water. He's got to make water, because there's no water on Mars.
Oh, yeah.
So he that's has to hilarious. Make it by burning hydrogen.
And that's in the book.
It blows him like halfway across the room, and the next cut is him sitting down, and he's still smoking. It's almost cartoony, but it's realistic.
It's like Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, but it's that's still realistic. And his first comment, he turns on the log, and he goes, okay. So I blew myself up. You know, we laugh at these lines because they're done with such a sense of desperation underneath it. I mean, his situation is so bleak when you think about it. He doesn't have enough food. He doesn't have any water. He doesn't have the resources. And he's got to do it alone. No communication, no nothing, for years and years and years. At least that's his mindset at the beginning. Uh-huh. And instead of giving up or whatever, he goes through the, I'm going to science the shit out of this. I got this. You know, he holds up the book.
Yeah. I'm a botanist.
Lucky thing. I'm a botanist. Yeah, that's great. But even those, the suit designs, you know, they're definitely designed so A, we can see their faces mm-hmm. and have lights on their faces, but also it is practical. It works as an aesthetic. The technology works all through it. The Ares rocket designs work all the way through it. So the science for me in this is a great plus for the show. for this movie.
I was going to say that Steven Snyder may be falling out of our good graces because this movie is not included on the 1001 movies you must see before you die.
What? He's out.
I know. Yeah,
right. He needs an addition. He needs an addition too. The 2002.
Yeah. Maybe movies. This book is about 10 years old. And they need to update it.
It needs to update and have an addendum to it or whatever. Yeah. I mean, for those of you who have not seen it, then we just spoiled the crap out of it for you. So I don't know why you're listening to us. But for those of you who had, I mean, we're not going to go through it scene by scene, but there's such great. To me, okay, because I've just got great scenes on my list over here. But the first one was when they're taking off. Well, the whole opening, the whole, you know, they are taking off literally 9 minutes after the opening. So it is fast and energetic, but also lots of character development, ribbing among them. We know who the commander is. We know how this works, yada, yada. But when they are taking off and the light beacons are going around, it's showing he holds on that one shot of the empty chair as the light pans down the chair. And just to reinforce, they left somebody. There's one missing. Right. There's an empty chair. It was a great choice. I was going, that says it all.
Well, and that's very similar to Wrath of Khan as far as keys when Kirk looks over and sees Spock's chair empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's that visual emphasis to us that we're, you know, there's a missing formation here. There's something gone, sort of thing. But that whole opening is just, it's a very tight 10-minute opening that hooks us, that works really well.
I have a question. Why, and I didn't go back and rewatch it, but why do they go out in the storm? I can't remember.
They're out in the storm anyway. And they're doing their last bit to come back inside.
But they go in.
Well, yeah, they're doing their last bit, and they supposedly have like 2 more hours. And then Kate Morrow gets an update, because remember, there's a 13-minute lag. So she gets an update from NASA saying the storm has shifted, and you need to look at this, and you need to come in, Commander. And she goes, I'll be in a few. She goes, no, you need to come in now. And they all come in and look at it and realize not only is it a lot sooner than they thought, it's a lot bigger than they thought. Mm-hmm. And so that's
why. But
then
they go back out.
Because they've got to get to the MIRV. They've got to get to the ship. They're in the habitrail.
Oh, okay. Now that makes sense now. Okay.
And they've got to get suited up and get to the ship to take off. Plus the fact that it can't take off if it's out of alignment.
Yeah, it's like so many degrees off because of the wind.
Yeah, 12 degrees off, they can't launch.
It's the leaning spaceship of Mars.
Yes. And also, in doing some research, found out that, Weir was a scientist before he wrote this. He had actually done some astrophysics and some other stuff and everything else and was really pretty science savvy going into it. And one of the impetuses for writing the story was the storm. The fact that Mars at times can have literally planet-wide storms. The storm that can sweep the entire, surface of the planet. Mm-hmm. And they can be pretty damaging. So one of the things in us eventually colonizing Mars is how do we handle that? How do we deal with that amount of storm? I thought Mark was damn lucky in 18 months he didn't have another storm that bad.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, he did have one because it wasn't a storm. I'm thinking of when he had the tarp tied on the outside. It was after the explosion.
But that was during a small storm because it did tear a hole. That's what created the explosion, was the tear.
Right.
I did like that too, and I talked to somebody about that, the fact that it shows that, you know, a tarp and gaff tape can keep him alive. Something that simple, put over this huge, vast hole. He puts up plastic and duct tape.
And he uses duct tape on his helmet too when it cracks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Duct tape, you know, it works.
It does.
Let's see, what a cast. I keep saying that.
I'm looking at some of my trivia. Andy Weir says the only thing that he was disappointed not to see in the film was a line he had about Aquaman. Did you know that?
No.
He had a line in the book. How come Aquaman can control whales? They're mammals. It makes no sense.
That is so good.
And what's weird, segueing into that, is that apparently there's a ton of Marvel connections to this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But we talked about the Iron Man with his suit. We talked about Sebastian Stan playing Bucky. But apparently Kate Mara played Sue Storm in one of the Fantastic Four movies they made. There's been several.
Yep.
And she's also
Benedict Wong is in Doctor Strange.
Correct. Donald Glover is the voice of Spider-Man in the Ultimate Spider-Man animated series. And later appeared in Spider-Man Homecoming. You mentioned Benedict Wong and Ejiofor in Doctor Strange. And Matt Damon appeared as Loki Actor in Thor Ragnarok.
Right. And isn't Kristen Wiig in Wonder Woman?
She's in Wonder Woman. That's not a Marvel movie, yeah. But yeah, it's a superhero movie.
Yeah, superhero movie.
She's
yeah.
in the new Wonder Woman. For sure. I just thought that was interesting. But then again, Marvel's getting so huge that one of these days, they're not going to be able to avoid that with anybody.
Yeah, it's going to be like, they were in a Disney movie, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody was.
Oh, again, another good scene I've got. I love his choice of the duality of the Pathfinder when, like, it's showing Mark drill into the hood of the car at the same time at JPL they're drilling, and then they both mm-hmm. fall, and you know, even though it's probably weeks away from when it happened, it looks like it's happening simultaneously.
It's part of that time. Montage type style. I can mention what awards it was nominated for. It was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture, Best Performance by an Actor, Best Writing, Drew Goddard, Best mm-hmm. Sound Mixing, Best Sound Editing, Best Visual Effects, and Best Production Design.
Mm-hmm.
However, that was just nominations. It was a winner. So it didn't win any Academy Awards. That's crazy. Nope. But
yeah,
it won Golden Globes. It won Best Motion Picture, and it won Best Performance by an Actor. Both Golden Globes. It was nominated for picture, but didn't win. Mm-hmm. It was nominated for director, but didn't win. And then it was nominated for pretty much all those same things as a BAFTA and did not win. However, in our Saturn Awards with the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films, it did win Best Director. So Ridley Scott got some clout there, mm-hmm. Even though he didn't get it in some of the more major ones. And then AFI gave it Movie of the Year. I've never really heard that, but I guess AFI has awards too.
Hmm. The American Film Institute? Well, I guess they probably do. Yeah.
Yeah. 2016 Movie of the Year. Hmm. So those are what I have as far as awards. It was nominated for a shit ton, didn't win them, but it did get some from Golden Globes and the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror. That is so hard to say. I just need to say Saturn Awards, because that's what they're called, Saturn Awards.
It deserved a lot more, I think.
Oh, I think so, too.
Special effects.
I wonder what it was up against.
Like we said, it has a David Bowie song on it, so how could it be bad?
That's another thing, is I really love the way they do the music in this movie.
Because the fact that he hates disco.
Yeah, and Ridley Scott is really good doing science fiction with real moody music. You don't mm-hmm. hear him use pop music, which when he did it, I was like, this is perfect. He's, mm-hmm. you know, you just don't expect it from him. Because they use I Will Survive in the credits, but they also use like an ABBA song and I can't remember some disco song. And then, like you said, they use Starman, which is one of my favorite Bowie songs.
I mean, that's just perfect. Just the final scenes I've got are I like he's a space pirate when he realizes he's a space pirate because he's taken over the MAV.
And somebody down on Earth recognizes what he's saying too.
Well, no, she says, Mindy says, he wants us to call him Blondebeard. Now, and he goes, well, you know, I know he told us.
Exactly. So someone else knew what he was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. That was Kapoor, his character. Mm-hmm. I liked the, I've got the power of math is all the way through this. I like the symbolism of shaving and the way they did that scene and the way Matt Damon played that scene, because you could see him, there's no dialogue at all, but you could see him facially just saying, if I'm going to die, I'm not going to die an ugly corpse kind of thing. You know what I mean? I'm going to go ahead and shave. I'm going to look, you know, I'm going to be an astronaut again before I do this. And there's such great tension. You would think in the last third of this movie, they wouldn't have anything like that, but there's such tension in, is he going to make it or not kind of thing. And I was glad he did.
Well, and then they throw in all that gravity shit at the end, which is almost, you know, amps it up. I don't need him floating out there like Iron Man.
Right. Well, and I was so glad that they didn't lose somebody. I thought as soon as she kissed him on his spacesuit, oh my God, he's a goner. He's going to end up dying or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or the captain's going to do something. She's going to have to sacrifice herself because at least she brought him back. You know, da 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 da. But they didn't. Everybody lived, and they have that whole denouement at the end during the credits and everything of what each of them kind of how their lives.
Love that. Forward. It's like a curtain call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would, damn it. That was going to, that was my key is a curtain call.
Oh, sorry. Well, I mean, a lot of movies do it though, but I just like when they do it.
But this literally is a curtain call. I mean, like when it shows her have her little scene and she turns around, and it says Mindy, you know, Mindy Parks was played by, you know, I mean, it, they each have their little moment. Sort of thing too, which I really thought was cool. It had a hopeful ending because it was the launch of Ares 5 of the next stage of the mission. And for those of us who are huge space nuts and NASA files, having seen missions to Mars is a good thing. You know, I know people don't necessarily like Elon Musk, but he's pushing. So I like that. Go for it.
Well, and I mean, a lot of people think Jeff Daniels is an asshole in this movie, but the whole reason he's doing what he's doing is to keep the program alive.
Too. Right. He goes, I show them six dead astronauts and they're not going to give us any funding at all. You know, and he's right.
No.
So it's very true. Okay, Keys. So you go there.
Well, you just mentioned one that I was going to hit first because it's probably the oldest. Is that there's a lot of Greek god mentioned in this movie because all of these ships and like missions are named after gods.
Yeah.
Ares is the one that's coming up. Hermes is their ship that is going back. And both of those are the Greek versions of the Roman versions, Mercury and who is Ares? Mars. Mars is, isn't he? I think Mars is the equivalent of Ares. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I have that wrong,
it's the Ares.
You mythology Ares nerds is like, may correct me.
Ares is like Apollo to them. Ares is all of the missions because they're Ares 3. Ares 4 is the one that he's going to. Ares 5 is the one that launches at the end.
Right.
So Ares is like their Apollo. Hermes is the name of their particular ship.
Ship.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a great one. I love and I like, I think NASA will do that, probably continue to use, you know, Greek and Roman gods. As
yeah, I think it's cool.
Our mythology. My oldest one is Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Because
that is a great one.
Very similar to this in that we're following one guy and his solo survival on Mars. It's essentially the same, you know, basic thematic plot without it being all the details that go with it. Because naturally a lot else happens. There's invaders and monkeys.
There's another guy there.
Yeah.
We should do that movie. I like that movie.
I do too.
It's got Paul what's-his-face in it. Isn't his name Paul something?
Paul. Yeah, you're right. I can't remember it right now. Yes.
Anyway, it's an old movie. What else do we have? You can't avoid the Alien Keys because Ridley Scott is the director of the Alien movie, and there is a line in this movie where Beth tells Beck to be careful because in space, and then she doesn't finish the line, and you just wait for her to say, "No one can hear you scream,"
right?
Which is that tagline from Alien.
Well, in my first Alien key from this, my first one was the very beginning. the way they just show, it's right after the 20th Century Fox logo, mm-hmm. and it just shows stars, and it holds for a long time, and you're hearing some kind of weird music, and then it comes up with just the title really slow and kind of comes in weird ways. I was going, okay, that is such a homage to Alien. Mm-hmm. It's like he was saying, yeah, remember I did that. Okay, let's go. All right, let's do this.
Oh, that's funny. Most of the ones I have after that are ones that I lifted. So I don't want to say all of them because one of them I think you're going to say.
Well, the next one I've got on mine is Apollo 13, of course, okay. because it is that, you know, disaster in space, how do we fix it sort of feel? And what can we do helped by the people at NASA on the ground who are helping me do this? How can we survive? Mm-hmm. So it's very Apollo 13 feel.
I've got a casting key that is not a science fiction casting key. Matt Damon played Private Ryan, and they were going back to rescue him too.
It would save him.
Yeah.
I meant to look in my note. I meant to look it up. Was this before Bourne or after Bourne? Because, you know, that
this
was like
movie,
his,
I would say it's in the midst because they did three of those movies.
Yeah. And that was his franchise. You know, he really, you know, showed everybody up with that franchise. That kind of, you know, I know that he and what's his name hit it with Good Will Hunting. That was like their little, you know,
Ben Affleck,
push into Hollywood. And that was Matt Damon's debut.
That
and
was
all
in
that
the
kind
90s.
But, you know, he has been severely, I think, underrated as an actor. Everybody's always DiCaprio or whatever, but Matt Damon is really strong. He's mm-hmm. a really good actor. I've got, of course, the big three: Mission to Mars, Red Planet. You know, all the ones that were the other Mars stories, but they're all involved. Like, oh, we found a hieroglyph. We found pyramids. Oh, there's alien robotic killers on Mars.
It's always inhabited by something. Yeah,
it's always something right. silly or stupid, you know. But one of my other ones we've already covered. I think we did it last year, or year before. But Silent Running. There's a mm-hmm. lot of that solo astronaut
out in space by himself,
even though he's on a planet and not in space. But it's the same right. thing, that isolation feel and a little brief moment of I'm kind of doing pretty good at this, you know, kind mm-hmm. of thing, which is the way Lowell is in Silent Running before the ships find him again. He's kind of going, you know, this will work. I kind of got the hang of this, you know? So that was one of the keys for me.
This one I did not know, and it kind of took me by surprise, but the soundtrack quotes the ping sound
yeah, every
at the
time
beginning
goes,
that's they lifted that from Pink Floyd's Echoes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
and as soon as I heard it in my head, as soon as I read that, I went, oh, okay. I mean, now, you don't have any more of the song, but you have that sound.
When they did it at the end too, they did it when it cuts back and he's back on Earth kind okay. of thing. And so that, yeah. That's a good one. I've got Moon. I don't know if you've seen that, but it actually is a really good movie. It's Sam Rockwell is, I think for a good, probably 80% of that movie, he is the only character in it. And he's essentially marooned on a station on the moon, but he's a solo act all the way through that. He gets a computer voice with Kevin Spacey, but most of that movie is a solo performance by him. And he's pretty good in it too. But it's the style. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of that. You know, I'm isolated. Come save me.
Yeah, there's a lot of lonely people. I mean, I mentioned Gravity. I don't know if we've mentioned it since we got the keys. But, I mean, very similar. It's harrowing. She's in space. She's alone. So, I mean, it's a very similar trope, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm. And I've got a weird kind of slanted key, which is probably my last one, but it's when I first saw this and then rewatching it again, I love where they shot it and was going, okay, this isn't CGI. Where did they film this movie? Because it looks so cool. And they filmed, I found out they filmed it in Jordan, which is where most of the desert scenes, most of Mark's Mars scenes are filmed in Jordan. And it had that same kind of feel to me, like when I watched Lord of the Rings and went, these are practical places. Where did they film this? And found out they found all these places in New Zealand that were just perfect for the epicness or the weird angles or whatever. And it was that kind of pseudo feel to me of finding a great location that is on Earth, but isn't, you know, sort of thing.
What was the key?
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Okay.
Yeah. For location scouting, for finding the best location for it. Yeah.
You mentioned Conquest of Space, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, because I had lifted that as well.
And that's a very George, you know, the spaceship design even is similar to that, in that fact that the center ladder that comes down that you have to climb up and all that, that's very Conquest of Space.
And you mentioned Mission to Mars too, right?
Uh-huh. Red Planet.
Then I only have one other one that I'm kind of shocked you haven't mentioned, so...
Yeah,
I guess I will just do it. I'm just going through to make sure I'm not leaving something out. Apparently, there's an episode of The Expanse called... Oh, no, excuse me. It's the novel called Babylon's Ashes.
Yeah, one of the books. Yeah.
First it says The Expanse, 2015, novel, Babylon's Ashes, makes a casual reference to a Mars-based colony ship named Mark Watney.
Really? I didn't know that. I have to look at that and see.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know if it's in the series or in the book or both, but I figured you would know because you love that show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have to look at that and see. It may have been one of those passing things. They do that. There's a lot of Easter eggs in Expanse of different things that are really cool. But yeah, that's an interesting one because, again, as far as television shows, Expanse is probably the best science fiction television for science fiction.
There we go again. Is that in the top 10 then? You got that, Andromeda Strain, The Martian. What else?
Day the Earth Stood Still.
Day the Earth Stood Still. Is science fiction? I thought you liked the science stuff.
Well, yeah, but those are the best. I mean, I do like the science stuff better. But yeah, as far as, definitive quote science fiction, then you got 2001.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about science fiction in general. I'm talking about the science of science fiction.
Yeah, but the science of science would still have 2001. It would still have The Expanse. It would still have this movie. Okay. Again, because my precept, as everybody who listens to us knows, without the science, you wouldn't have the movie. The science precedes the plot and also propels the story forward.
Yeah. One last thing I would like to say about the feel of this movie is I love the excitement at the end and how it almost makes me cry just thinking about it, how everyone on Earth is listening and watching what is happening. And they're all in the streets of Times Square, you know, wanting them to save this guy. And you just get almost as overwhelmed with emotion as he does when he's talking to his friends and getting ready to take off. Mm-hmm. And I was just watching it, just practically weeping like a kid.
Oh, yeah. And it's, again, to me, that's a very Apollo 13 feel, the way they film it and the tension and the music and the buildup. And then you finally hear that. NASA, this is Commander Lewis, all astronauts on board. And you go, wow!
You're just like, oh, my God. Because it's like such a shot in the dark. You're like thinking, there's no way. I mean, so many things could go wrong, that, especially when she's out there in that chair on a seatbelt.
Yeah.
A giant orange seatbelt.
She's in the MMU with everything, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, I was still expecting something's going to happen. The tether's going to tear, or she's going to have to sacrifice herself and shoot him toward the airlock to save his life.
That would suck.
You know, I would have hated that. But Scott didn't do that, or Goddard, whoever, you know, made that decision writing wise to make it a happy ending, to make the science work, which kind of goes along with, you know, Watney's character all the way through it.
Yeah.
You know, we can make I know this is adverse situations. No one's ever had to do this before, but we can make it happen. We know how to do it. Smarts win.
You know? I will say that's a horrible wig he's in when he's teaching at the end. I was like, God, call RuPaul.
Oh yeah, he's got the
that
really
wig did not look real.
Gritty,
I was like,
the glasses. I was like,
yeah.
Is it 1970? Where, what happened? Are you in a porno? What are you doing? Yeah.
Well, I guess that's gonna wrap us up for this one, huh? Our second episode of the fourth season.
Four
two episodes away from the 100th episode of all.
Our 100th episode of all time. That's
awesome. You know, and let's mention this while we're at it. Last year, we didn't realize it until we got into the season a little bit, that we had a bit of a theme going on with comedy and horror and comedy and sci-fi. Well, this season, we have kind of a female theme going on. This movie is not one of those, but there are several coming up that are.
Good. It's the Me Too season. Yes, we'll have a female-centric gender thing.
No me too. Just power, women power.
Okay, women power. Okay, good. Yeah, help me through this. Yeah. Women power. Okay, good.
And we'd like to thank all of y'all for tuning into us, whether it be on YouTube. And if it is on YouTube, reach down and hit the subscribe button and like and rate us, if you will, as far as podcast. We are going to be returning sometime, hopefully this season, to the second season of Star Trek on Patreon. But right now we are currently doing the first season of The X-Files, and those are our bonus Patreon shows if you would like to subscribe to those. If not, we have a lot of free bonus stuff on there as well.
Yes. Yes, we love hearing from you too. So let us know email wise. You can, we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, all those fun things. So
and I guess I will be seeing you next week in the world of darkness.
Oh, yes. We have to go back there. I'll put my space.
Oh, no. Actually, this one's got a little bit of a comedic twist, too, now that I think about it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you there.
All right. Bye.
Bye.